Welcome to the show. How do you like us?
Yeah.
Great? Oh, that's beautiful. Welcome.
Okay, so we are live.
Are we?
Welcome to the podcast, guys. This is the Taylor Jones podcast. That's the name of it at the moment. Today we have on my best friend since childhood. I think it was fourth grade. And it's going to be Luke Prince. Welcome to the show, Luke.
Thanks, Taylor. I think your name's terrible. Not your personal name, but your podcast name.
We can rethink that. That's total...
We'll work on it.
Yeah, we definitely can. That's...
Well...
We totally can.
I think that is still in the works, and I think it's a beautiful thing that you are starting a podcast because... Or you've already started a podcast. Which is...
It's been really, back of my mind. Like, I haven't been, like... I feel whenever you're doing any type of content, you should be, like... on a schedule.
Yeah.
And I've been just, oh, I think I've had like 5 episodes.
Yeah. I think like we were saying before the show, we both have been doing podcasts before podcasts were a thing. But just not recording it. Mm-hmm. So it's just a beautiful thing of not recording podcasts all these time. And then we've just been practicing. And now...
Here we are. Live.
We're live. I don't know what the fuck live means, because life is always live.
It
have
is.
You ever thought about that? Like, when people say, let's do it live, or fuck, let's do it live. And you're like, wait.
You know where that came from? Do you know where that came from?
No. Where is it from?
Bill O'Reilly.
Really?
Bill O'Reilly on Fox News.
He had, gotta love Fox News.
Yeah, you never seen this? Fuck it, we'll do it live?
I think...
That was the cool...
I've heard of that phrase, but I didn't know where
that was from. Bill O'Reilly... And this was a popular, like, when I was in high school, that he was reading the teleprompter, and his words wouldn't keep up with him. He was trying to say this. He was trying to read the script.
Oh.
And it wouldn't keep up. He's like, he fucking got pissed off. He's like, fuck it, we'll do it live. It went live. What him swearing went live. It was hilarious.
That's beautiful. Good.
It was hilarious.
I think we should capture more of those moments, because I think society in its whole...
Yeah.
Needs to always be perfect on the dot. And I think that's a great way podcasts are really evolving and really kind of like coming to the scene, because people can just be themselves.
Exactly.
Fuck up.
So that's one thing I want to say. So one of the reasons one of the things that I told Luke before, I told you before we started, was when I go into it, I want to have the intention just be, okay, how can we provide value, entertain, inspire, educate, and be ourselves? Now, I want to ask you a question, Lou. Why do you think, because obviously podcasts have taken a tremendous amount of popularity, why do you think podcasts have taken off so much? Why are people willing to sit down and listen to something for 3 hours?
Yeah.
That was not expected. Why do you think?
Well, first off,
what is it about our times?
It's free. Like, anything that's free, I mean, anything that's good and provides value to your life, I think, and it's free, will automatically, like, gravitate people.
Yeah.
I think people are very, like, curious and learning all the mm-hmm. time. And, like, to be learning all the time and be on the go all the time really kind of, like, meshes well with, like, the podcast delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why, like, podcasts are just kind of like, boom, exploded.
Yeah.
Almost overnight. Like, when we were in high school, it was, like, podcasts were just, like, one person has a podcast. And before that, like, radio was huge. Like, talk radio was, like, through the roof. I remember listening to, like, I don't know if you remember Howard Stern, but, like, probably wasn't supposed to be listening to it as a kid.
I've never heard his Howard Stern.
He's a very interesting character, but he like runs. I think
you know. So
I think it's XM
yeah.
Radio, but like he was almost like the pre-podcast kind of like king, and then you know people like Joe Rogan and like
took off. So one of the things is while you were literally just talking there came to mind is so what I want. I would love to have you go on and say, because, you know, for the people that don't know, Luke does health coaching, nutritional coaching through a company.
Kinda.
What would you call it? Or just the name of it?
The my title?
Yeah.
You know, it's like I do a little health coaching, but also I do a little other stuff.
Okay. But anyways, he knows a lot. He's went to school for exercise science, pretty much vegetarian now, and been very active into learning and researching when it comes to health and fitness.
Love it.
Okay. So one of the questions I want to ask you, and we can, you know, share with people, from your experience, what are you finding that is people's biggest struggle? And if they were able to get over that, or what are the biggest keys when it comes to health and diet, exercise, whatever? And what are the things that people struggle with the most? And like, the where do you find the golden nuggets are when it comes to losing weight and staying healthy?
I think that's a very loaded question.
Yeah, I know it is.
It's a very giant question. I think it's a multi-billion dollar question. But in the sense, why do we put value on questions is beyond me. I think that's our capitalist mindset that just kind of like, oh, well, if we answer this question, we're going to be rich. But
well, I guess
to get back to your question.
I guess a better way to say it, what would be the biggest lessons that you've seen or the biggest helping pieces that if you've noticed over your experience?
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge multivariable question. So like, the one answer that I may give may not like play off on like different aspects of like losing weight is totally different than like living healthy. And what does it mean to live healthy? And like, what are these like kind of like umbrella terms that we throw out there that like the common public just like into the world and they're like, I want to get healthy, but what does that mean to you, you know?
Okay, so let's break it down into subjects maybe.
Yeah.
So what would you say a majority of your clients struggle with?
I would say
the biggest issue that you're always addressing.
People in general, the root of the problem, there's multiple roots, but one of the
what's
main
a big problem that
what's
people are
the main
with?
Root is just
what's a struggle?
And this is a huge term to throw out there, is behaviors.
Like habits.
Habits, behaviors, our day to day kind of like,
I like where this is going.
Our day to day kind of like rollout. Mm-hmm. Our day to day structure, our day to day like what we do when we wake up, what we do when we like get in the car or go on a commute, what we do when we get home. Like all these things kind of like
build,
add up. And you can like start to notice it over time, but ultimately it comes down to like your decisions that you make every single day and the habits that you build from those like decisions. Mm-hmm. And then that leads to, you know, whether you're like awesome at like going to the gym, or you're like really good at eating healthy, or you're like,
so you would
really good at grabbing a Twinkie, like
you know right where it is. So what you guys deal with is basically, if I'm hearing you correctly, setting up a system of habits, getting practicing, developing the right habits so that people are, it's becoming a part of their everyday, the healthy habits, and getting rid of the bad stuff.
Yeah, because when you make a choice, you're making that choice like one time. And I think we've all been there where we can decide to like get up early, and we can decide to like go work out, and then the next day we can decide to do the same
thing
or sleep in. And I think like this habit model of just like, oh, you decide to, you know, work out in the morning, you know, for 45 days straight, and you're like, wow, I really feel like this is just second nature to me.
Yep.
Then things become easier in the long run because you're just like, oh, if I don't like work out in the morning, then I'll be off, you know.
Exactly.
And I think we go in and out of habits, which is like, for me, for you, for anyone, like this is even the most perfect of perfect people, like we go in and out of habits.
Like we do, like when you say in and out, you mean like you do really well for a little bit, you might have a slip up, and then you kind of try to get back on the train. You try to get, like maybe you're going to the gym for 30 days, you fall off for a week, you get dripped, you get back on.
Yeah, but I think like falling off the train, I know that like term, like falling off the wagon, falling off the train is really overused and an easy analogy to kind of relate to. But also this comes down to is like, every single day is a new day. Like every single
exactly
afternoon, every single like 4 p.m. is a new 4 p.m., you know?
So one of the things that I think people struggle with is, so they'll be doing well for like, you know, and then all of a sudden let's say that they have a good breakfast, a great workout, maybe just like a toast and eggs, and then all of a sudden they have a smoothie for lunch. They're feeling their day's going well in terms of health. 2:30 comes around, someone puts a donut or two in front of them, and they just binge on like six. And then they think to themselves in their mind, and I'm curious if you've had this with your clients before, they think to themselves, oh, I ruined it. And then instead of just having a donut and being like, okay, that was good, and stopping, the rest of their day is just, oh, I fucked up, I had five donuts, I might as well have everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Instead of just saying like, okay, I'm going to enjoy a donut and move on. And I'm not going to let it ruin everything. I'm not going to let it permeate or throw off my next 3 hours or my next 3 days.
Yeah.
Do you find that at all? Or do you know what I'm saying?
Like the all or nothing principle.
Exactly.
Like you fuck up, so why?
What's the point?
What's the point of the rest of the day? And I think that's really hard for a lot of people, including myself, probably including you too. It's like, we'll like eat something. And then we're like, wow, that tasted really good. Like, that was like beautiful mouth pleasure. And then be like, I want another one. And you're like, I want another one. Mm. Until you're like, oh, I feel like fucking shit.
Yeah.
But then the rest of your day, like, I had that like 3 cranberry donuts. And now, I don't know why I said cranberry, but like, I've never really had a cranberry donut. I don't know. We'll have to,
We'll have to explore
the donut shop.
So we'll place bets here. I'm willing to bet they don't have cranberry donuts.
I mean, there's probably one donut out there that has one cranberry on top.
And they put it on the shelves and it didn't sell and they got rid of it.
They're just looking for their customer base.
Exactly.
That's me. But anyways, going back to what we said is like, you know, that all or nothing thinking can really be something to work on. But like you said, it's also not restricting yourself in a way that you completely like cannot control balance. And I think that's the key in like a lot of like people that are like really good at like staying healthy, quote unquote.
Keep talking, I'm gonna check the camera.
Is
They have a balance. I think they stretch it out. They find a balance over... They view their health in terms of, like, long term, you know?
Yeah, going back to, like, your donut example is really crucial. It's like, if you want a donut, enjoy the donut. Mm-hmm. Be, like, aware that, like, this donut brings you feelings of really, like, wonderful pleasure. Because it's, like, sugar is amazing. It tastes amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no other way to describe it.
So why, I want to get right to the meat and potatoes. Why are we so fucking fat nowadays? Oh. Why is obesity on the rise? And what are the things that we can do?
Is it?
Obesity?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it is.
I'm not an epidemiologist. I think younger people are becoming more aware, though. Are seeking more
obesity help. Okay, let's see what obesity trends. I'm just gonna Google obesity trends because from the last time I've heard, I feel like that's maybe it's like not stereotypical, maybe it's like, I feel like it's just like common knowledge that obesity is on the rise. Maybe it's not.
It could be.
So here we go. So this is harvard.edu. The rate of obesity has nearly doubled since 1980.
That's 1980, so that's 40 years ago.
So obesity rates have steadily been in the rise in children. In 2010, 43 million preschool children were overweight or obese. That's a 60% increase since 1990.
That's very interesting.
So a 60% increase.
Yeah.
In 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, that's a question that's huge, and that's a multi-answer kind of question.
So what do you think, right to the bottom of it, what do you think are the main things that play into that?
I would say one of the main things is accessibility. Like, what are people regularly have access to? You know, what's easy for people? What can they get their hands on?
Fast food.
What's cheap? It's not only fast food. You can walk into Walmart. Walmart's not a fast food joint, but you can pick up, like, processed shit.
Well, you remember we'd walk up to, in Walmart, we'd go, in college, we'd go to the, you walk up, and they'd have the little cases, the pizza cases.
Oh yeah.
$5.
Unbelievable.
We used to get two. I remember in college, you probably were there with me. We'd get two or three pizzas. Each. I'd go home, smoke a couple bowls, get ripped, and then just stuff my face on pizza.
Marijuana does a great job of just bringing out your appetite, which is great. Especially
if it also makes you lazy. It also makes you lazy. It can. Actually, I shouldn't say that. It can. Yeah. Like, you look like people like Snoop Dogg, right? Or even Joe Rogan, right? Those guys are fucking... I don't know what Snoop's activity is. I know Joe is a big smoker. Big into pot. Like, almost every day. I don't know about Snoop Dogg, but these people are very successful people.
Yeah.
It's very highly athletic. Highly successful.
I think it rolls very back passionate. To, like, that balance thing. That
absolutely.
You're talking about.
So I think that it
it's... As cliche it is to sound, like, life is all about yin and yang.
I think it's easily abused. Like, yeah. like any drug.
Yeah, any drug can be abused. Any substance, any chemical, anything in life. Walls can be abused, for God's sake.
Can we go there?
Let's just hold off on the humping of the walls, Taylor. But yeah, like it's crazy to think how much access to shitty food we have.
Yeah.
But I think that's changing. I really have an optimistic kind of mindset of, hopefully people are, you know, being aware of their choices. And, you know, for those who do have access and do have privilege to choose, quote unquote, better options for themselves. And I think when you say, like, better options, that's for a person to kind of, like, figure out what works for them. Because we're all individuals. You know, you may eat an apple and I may eat an apple. I may go to the hospital for eating an apple because I'm allergic to the apple, and you may be fine with the apple.
Yeah,
you
know? So this brings up another topic. So I have been back and forth on this, you know, and I'm sure you know already. Yeah, exactly. So all, you know, when it comes to, like, veganism, right? So I was vegetarian in college, went back to meat for a little bit. Then I started getting really into yoga. I went vegan for 3 months, and then I stopped again. And now I'm, you know, I have meat in my diet. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on vegan? And what's right? What's best for people? What are your thoughts on that?
I think what's best for people is what they figure out works for them. I don't think you should ever exclude anything.
So here's my question. As you know, there's a lot of people out there that are pushing cruelty of the animals, which I'm not saying that's not true. Like, yes, the way that cattle, not only its harvesting effects, but the way that it's harvested, all these animals, it's a lot of suffering. It's a lot of waste. It's a lot of water. It's a lot of methane gas. Becoming widespread because of Netflix now. So,
which is a beautiful thing. Yeah. I think people should be aware.
So, what do you say to people though that, like, those the vegan activists that are saying everyone should be vegan? What are your thoughts on that? Like, what do you say to those people?
What do I say to them?
Like, what are your thoughts on that? Yeah.
Dear vegan people, how would I address your letter to them?
Okay, by the way, for anybody, I want to tell, actually, before Luke answers this question, Luke calls me up, was it 2 nights ago? 2 nights ago. And he's laughing, but when I answer the phone, he's laughing his ass off. And he goes, Taylor, I went through Trader Joe's. And he's interrupting himself with his own laugh. And he goes, asking people where the Argula is.
Where is the Argula? No one knows where the fucking Argula is.
I was like, dude, come on over. We should go out at the trivia night. He comes over. He flips through like 30 recorded videos on his phone of like hidden videos asking people in public in an English accent where the Argula is.
It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
So there's that. That's where the English accent came from.
Fantastic.
But yeah, so let's answer the question. Why? What do you say to those people? Because... And then I'll tell you my opinion, but I want to hear yours.
Yeah. I think that awareness is important. I think though that extremism stretches us so far as a society to see, oh shit, this is what everything is doing, you know, like makes us aware of like what's the worst of the worst that can be happening right now, and then kind of like moves that line to where as a society we move forward a little more to kind of creating not like this utopian kind of like sphere, because we'll never get there, we'll never like create this like Eden place where everyone lives happy and
you don't think?
I think we're gonna destroy the world before we get to Eden.
It's hard to say because from our my perspective,
yeah.
If you look at
Mother Nature will just destroy it for us, you know.
Yeah, in Hinduism, there's four stages, okay, that repeat themselves, and
I love Hinduism, by the way.
Yeah, I think it's every 2,500 years. I'm not. Don't quote me on that. I think I don't know what it is. It might be like 3,000.
25 to 3,000 years.
There's a 4-year cycle.
That's a big range.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of really knowledgeable scholars that talk about history cycles through and repeats itself. Yeah. You know, it's a common theme, right? Yeah. And
I think it's really important that we have historians that do that.
Because, yeah. Hold on. So let me finish my thought. So there's four stages, and the first one, I don't know what the names of them, but basically they get continuously better. And the third one is the best. It's kind of like that, the best society. And I'm pretty sure on this, but I know that the fourth stage is called the Kali Yuga. And that's what we just entered, I think, like the past few years, is the Kali Yuga. And the Kali Yuga is basically where, I'm not going to screw it up. I want to Google it real quick.
I love the name of that.
But it's basically a time. It's basically a time in history where the ego and the separateness of humans becomes most present, and the fear, the agitation amongst people becomes more and more until chaos breaks out. And basically, the according to the ancient texts, we've just entered the Kali Yuga as a society.
Okay.
So, I forget. What were we talking about that brought that up? I forget. We were talking about extremism on one behalf.
Yeah.
Something about veganism. Continue your point on veganism. The Kali Yuga.
Yeah. So I think to answer the question fairly, I think people should try out different shit. Like they should always be searching for like different things that interest them and that seem like reasonable for them to try out and like
connect with them
and mm-hmm. like I don't like you have to explore so many different areas, diet just to everything else in your life, like when you're remember back when we were kids and we were just like trying to figure shit out and we would be like, all right, let's go play soccer, and some of us were like really good at soccer and some of us were like really bad at soccer. And then you just, like, figure out, oh, shit, like, soccer is really not my thing. Or, like, that becomes a disinterest to you.
So you're saying that people really need to experiment with what and be and kind of tap into their own intuitive sense of what, when it comes to diet, when it comes to veganism, what works best for them. And be willing to do the research and explore and experiment. Yeah.
I think there's importance to have it, but there's also importance to experimentation. And I think, like, and that's something that I continuously work on is just, like, continuously experiment.
Because you're meat-free now. You're meat-free now, right?
Yeah.
So why did you go meat-free?
Well, it all started back in the day. you know, when it comes down to it, my first initiation was meat's fucking expensive. I mean, it's like...
Dude, a grass-fed pack of meat is it's like $7-$6.
It's a lot of money. And, you know... My pockets are not that deep. I know you guys are probably wondering how wealthy
he's
is
living
Luke?
In the streets of Brooklyn. You're dropping a good amount on rent there. I mean, but you're...
That is true. I am paying a lot for rent. don't remind me. Gosh dang it. actually, I live in a library. JK? LOL. See, to go back on that note of experimentation, I think everyone should get into this realm of being uncomfortable, trying out something new. But also, like, at the same time, when you do try out something new, like, develop a habit out of it. And then once you like...
find out what works and stick to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then once you find out that that works, maybe switch it up. You know, 3 months goes by, 6 months goes by, a year goes by, 10 years goes by. 10 years. I don't think as a human, 10 years from now, I should be the same Luke.
You
should, I should look back on Luke from the past and be like, who the fuck was that guy?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
So for me, my process from through in and out of veganism was I felt really good, and I will definitely associate, and you can speak on this too.
Mm-hmm.
There is most definitely a connection between cleaning up your diet, and when I say cleaning up your diet, where healthy clean water, you know, where are you getting your water? Not avoiding tap water, avoiding the fluoride, avoiding the chlorine, the whatever, the shit water. I think
avoiding the ocean. Don't drink from the ocean, yeah. Kids. All right.
So clean water.
I mean,
water,
you can drink a little from the ocean, but not too much.
Clean, clean water. Avoiding like processed meats and eating it, like it shouldn't be a majority of your diet. Okay. Healthy organic vegetables, organic fruits, getting sunlight. Like when you tap into all of those things,
yeah.
And you clean up yourself, my ability to meditate gets stronger. I become more peaceful. I become sharper. I become more present. I become more focused. And overall, my energy field is just stronger. So
yeah.
That's what drew me to vegetarianism to begin with, because I was following Collective Evolution in college, and they shared a lot of stuff on vegetarianism, on diet, and the impact that it has on you. So I was like, and as I started to meditate more, and I would sit down every day for 30 minutes after mm-hmm. class, and I would notice, because the good thing about is when you get into a routine, that when you're in a routine for 2 weeks, for say, you're doing the same thing every day, when you make a small tweak in your routine, when you're doing everything the same, it's almost like you can control variables.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So when I, you know, like for example, right now, I'm eating pretty much almost the same thing every day. So if I adjust my sleep cycle by an hour and I feel different the next day, I automatically know that it's because of my sleep cycle, because everything else is the same.
Yeah.
Whereas, okay, so what I began to notice in college was that when I was doing the same thing every day, the cleaner my diet got, the stronger my meditations, the more peaceful I became and the more calm I became.
Yeah.
And I noticed a direct relationship to that. That's what hooked me.
That's beautiful.
In my mind, I began to notice a direct relationship between the cleanliness of my diet and the strength of my consciousness. So I started to relate this to. Now, then when I ended up going to the ashram, I went the next step to veganism, and I had that support from the people, from the people I was there for 30 days. It was mm-hmm. an amazing experience.
Yeah.
But when I came back after a month or two, I started to feel pretty weak. And I started to get mental health declined, started to get more anxious, like I started to get depressed. And it was hard to say for me. I would be a stronger advocate on this, but there was also other things going on in my life at the time. So it's hard to say what it was.
Yeah.
I felt weak though, like my body wasn't strong. So for me, that's when I realized like, okay, I just intuitively felt like veganism, at least at this point in my life, is not the best thing for me. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So my take on that is I've lowered my meat consumption, but I would encourage everyone to try veganism. At least try it, because
yeah.
I think the vegan activists, when I say activists, I mean the people that are really passionate about it and that are spreading this message, they have a good intention in their heart. But and I don't stand with this with 100% certainty, but I don't genuinely know if everyone on the earth could go vegan tomorrow and be healthy. I don't know if that could be done. You know what I'm saying?
That's a great question. And it's a very theoretical question.
But I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of like learning to do though with taking on something like being vegan. It's a learning process both for yourself and for also the people that like you gotta remember like you have a family, like you can't like just be like, all right, I'm eating vegan, fuck you guys. You gotta take in consideration, because you know
you're cooking for everyone.
Everyone's budget is like, you know, you can't expect your like 3-year old to be like, hey buddy, you know, let's pick up the slack, you're going to buy your own dinner tonight. 3-year old you's like, yeah, let's do it.
Sure, mom, yeah. Give me a bigger allowance.
So I think that's a really, really powerful thing that you've experienced in your life. And I think more people, and like everyone gets to it when they want to get to it. And everyone like receives that kind of like, no matter if you're like listening to it right now. And like, I know I've heard things before where I'm like, oh shit, that does sound like a really good idea. But I wasn't ready to receive that information. You got to kind of be in that like right state, right timing to kind of like receive something and then act upon it, which I think is different for everyone. Like, it's never like I hear this message from this person and then bam, I make a change.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's in different states right now, resonating at different vibrations. Like, but I think important information from like the vegan community is,
that's what I think it spread, is going to be big. Is, like the fact amazing. That we're getting the knowledge out there. We're getting the knowledge out there that increase in red meat consumption also increases your risk of heart disease. We're getting the knowledge out there and exposing, okay, the people that are harvesting this meat are doing it. Sometimes it's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
The videos is like, holy shit, they have no care for the animals at all.
Yeah.
And it's pretty gross. And people are becoming aware of this now.
Yeah. There's this chicken coop that I walk by every single day in Brooklyn.
Really?
It's on my way to my rock climbing gym. It smells fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, it smells like...
I was going to say, explain that.
It's terrible. Like, I'll wake up at 6 in the morning and I'll go on my little trot, trip, trot, trip, trot to my rock climbing gym. And I'll walk by the chicken place, the chicken coop, and I'll just smell, and it's just so
gross,
off-putting, and to be smacked in the face by like that realism of like, oh shit, this actually exists. But to play devil's advocate,
well, hold on,
like,
you're saying that's a bad thing that chickens smell bad? I mean, chickens are gonna smell bad.
No, I mean the smell is one thing, but like, you know, let me describe the scene a little bit. They're in a chicken coop on a corner street. It's in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Very tiny. They're all caged up. When the
so the fact that they can't move is around is the problem.
Yeah, I think I heard this.
Well, they don't hate the chickens because they smell bad.
No, I don't hate the chickens.
Everyone shit stinks.
Yeah. But
okay.
I think what they say now is like cage-free eggs, by technical definition, which is fucked up in a way, just like advertising-wise. The chickens are guaranteed 1 square footage.
Yeah, it's
1 square foot.
The
so
rules are really nothing.
There's
nothing.
Is very like, is really fucked up to like the public, to be like, oh, it's cage free eggs. Chickens run around in the pasture and they go up on the hilltop and they sing the bells and then they run back and they're like, hey, daddy, where's the feed?
I've had the most amazing adventure, daddy.
And then they poop out the eggs and then you scramble them and then you yum 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 and then I'm like,
yeah.
Ooh.
So I was at after listening to Dave Asprey, I was like, well, he bulletproof coffee, butter in your coffee, right? That's what he talks about.
Pure butter.
So I went to Wegmans and I wanted to get grass fed butter.
Sorry, I didn't mean to pay 40
seconds. No, you got it, dude. Please.
If you guys are tuning in, me and Dale are about to engage in a game of interesting footsie, where our left toes will integrate with our other left toes, and then we'll socialize with our toes for a brief second off audio.
In case you've never played a game of footsie before.
Yeah.
We had the camera going, but it died in like 10 minutes.
I think it just saw our faces, and it was like, wow, these chaps are hideous.
No, I think it was the other way around.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure. But what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So the grass-fed.
So butter in the coffee. Coffee
yeah,
in the
yeah, so I was at Wegmans and I was trying to find grass-fed butter because he says, Dave Asprey says that you have to have grass-fed butter in your coffee. It don't work the same. The only thing that was grass-fed there was, the only thing that explicitly said grass-fed was, it was olive oil in it or something. But I was looking at the different definitions.
Olive's getting fed grass.
Well, no, it's no, no. Let me explain. It was grass-fed butter.
Wouldn't it be amazing
with olive oil, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So, but then I was Googling. Then grass-fed, I was like, all right, I need to Google what. I need to Google what the difference is. Yeah. So there's pasture raised. There's pasture raised butter. There's pasture raised butter.
Yeah.
Cows. Pasture raised cows. Butter. That's one. That's one option. So then there's grass fed butter. Do you know the difference?
No. Explain to me.
So the difference is that pasture raised cows are usually grass-fed because they're raised in a pasture. They're not enclosed to a cage. That's pasture-raised. However, some pasture-raised cows are brought in and fed pellets. The only requirement is that they're given a pasture. You see what I'm saying? So grass-fed is that they're only fed grass. They're not fed anything else other than grass. So a grass-fed cow, I don't know if it needs – it doesn't necessarily, according to code, need to be raised in a pasture. It just needs to be fed grass.
Yeah.
Are you following me on that?
Yeah, I do follow.
So that's the difference. And I was like –
that's very confusing.
Yes, it kind
words
of is.
Words are so confusing.
It kind of
sometimes.
Is. But I think it's important that we have these things because we don't just – we want to know – it's and especially in today's times, we need to be able to know where our food is coming from. What is this? Like, what am I actually eating right now?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think there's this, I think it's an Instagram account or Twitter account where it's like, where is my food from? And it just kind of like traces back like where food actually comes from. And today, like, there's a huge disconnect between, you know, trip chop, we go in the grocery store, we see some butter over there. Like, ooh, that looks like tasty butter. I'll use that on my broccoli tonight. And you have no idea what cow produced that butter, where it came from. Like, did it come from New Zealand?
Exactly.
Did it come from America? Did it come from, you know, Wales? Like, where did it come from? So I think there's a huge disconnect because everything is so accessible nowadays. But we're missing, like, 95% of, like, how that thing on the shelf was created. Which... I give you, like, kudos for going into a grocery store, pausing, and looking up.
Well, I'm just curious.
What the fuck things mean.
It's
because it's
pure
a
curiosity. It's pure curiosity.
I think, and what I would love to do one day is just, and I could do it for free. I would volunteer my time. As long as I was telling people the right information. I would be, like, a grocery store advocate. I would just, like, stand by... like the butter and be
fuck
like
that. I don't got time for
explain
that.
Explain butter to people, which would be, I think would be
maybe
really, really
while
cool.
I'm in the store, right? So if I'm buying butter and I see people stopping, I might be like I do that with water. Like if I'm getting my water and I see people like looking at me like, oh, I wonder what he's doing with the Primo machine, I'll totally advocate for fluoride free water. But I don't stand at the plural, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think
I'm like a walking advocate.
I think we've developed these grocery stores that are so efficient, which is amazing. Like, to have so much access to food is unbelievable. Like, compared to where we were 100 years ago, where we could barely get a potato.
It's crazy. No, it really is crazy. One of the things that I'll say is, it's so fascinating that we live... I heard someone say this the other day. When it comes to the human lottery... the probability of a human being to be born in the time, not only born in general, but born in the time that we've been born, we fucking struck gold.
Yeah.
Like the Buddhists say, I think it's the Buddhists, it's the Tibetan Buddhists. They have a saying that they say is the probability of being born a human. Imagine a sea, an ocean, as big as the universe, and there's a turtle.
I love oceans.
Yeah. Imagine.
And I love turtles.
Imagine ocean as big as this universe, like it's expansive, it's huge. And there's a turtle in the ocean, and it surfaces its head once every 100 years.
Damn.
Okay, and there's a ring the size of your arms. If you put your arms together, there's a ring, floating, just a plastic like life-saving ring, hula hoop. Floating at the top of the water. The probability of being born a human is the same probability. This is their analogy, at least. It's not a scientific fact. But their analogy is that the probability of being born a human is the probability of a turtle surfacing its head once every 100 years and having its head pop into that ring in up in between versus anywhere else in the ocean. That is the blessing that we've been given.
That's mind-blowing.
That's what they say.
And then you, as a turtle, bite the hula hoop, strangle yourself with the plastic, and then die back down into the sea, and Mother Earth takes you back in.
You just
and then
ruined
life
it.
Is a cycle. Lovely turtles.
Luke brought the darkness to it, but no, but
listen,
really,
that plastic's a problem. I mean,
yeah,
that's a whole nother topic that we could get onto.
And I don't know a lot about that, to be honest. I haven't done a lot of research on that, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are unaware of how fucked up we've gotten ourselves into, you know, producing such a magical kind of material such as plastic, and then overproducing and oversaturating the earth, and then just being like, oh, all this material we've been using for the past however many years is now coming to, you know, bite us in the ass a little.
Yeah.
Not to say that that's our only problem. I mean, not to point out that we have so many problems on the earth, but also, like, to just bring awareness. Like, nothing is good nor bad. It is just, it is what it is.
It is what it is. Are there any topics that you want to cover, things that you've been interested in recently, or any things that you specifically want to talk about today?
I love this time of year.
God. Why?
To be honest with you, I was about a month ago, I Googled this interesting question that was pondering in my head, given the seasonal change of, you know, fall or autumn.
Summer to fall.
Autumn. I asked this question is and I brought this up to a couple of my coworkers, is why do people shit on pumpkin spice lattes? And that was just the question in my mind. And I Googled it, and I got some very interesting articles that popped
up.
Okay,
well, go ahead.
I believe BuzzFeed wrote an entire article of why people hate pumpkin spice lattes, and why there's this coin term, like, pumpkin spice lattes are basic. Which, to
it's
me,
totally...
I'm going down this rabbit hole while I'm supposed to be working. Don't tell my boss.
What's your boss's name?
We'll call her Barbara. Barbara's a wonderful woman.
Barbara, hashtag word, and shout out to Barbara.
Barbara! Yeah, so... Excuse me while I drink my matcha. It's delicious. It's apple ginger matcha. It beats the Sunday scaries.
What do you think the revenue for a pumpkin spice... Like, what do you think the revenue that Starbucks brings in for their pumpkin spice latte kickoff?
I don't know.
Like, how much do you think they make per season just selling pumpkin spice lattes?
Ballpark, I could give you off the top of my head, just off of that one drink.
Literally the first thing that pops up, I literally type into Google, how much does Starbucks make on? The first thing that comes up is pumpkin spice lattes. The next thing comes up is in one day. The third thing that comes up is in tips. Mm.
So I'm gonna guarantee you the pumpkin spice latte beats the tips, which is sad, because those people at Starbucks work their tails off.
How much? It's about $4 for one.
I got my first one the other day.
Are they actually? Is it really that good? I've never.
I got
had
a
one.
Decaffeinated one, which.
What, Luke? I'm so embarrassed.
It was 6 o'clock, Taylor. I could not handle any more caffeine.
Dude, I am such an
addict. That was on the same day that I walked around Trader Joe's and asked for Argula to everyone.
Argula. Okay, so according to Nielsen data of pumpkin flavored products.
Nielsen data.
Reached 488.7 million over the last year. From
Ugh.
August 18th, 2017 to August 18th, 2018.
And it's a seasonal drink, I believe. They just take it in and take it out.
In one August week alone, sales reached about 5.6 million. And that was before the pumpkin spice latte dropped.
I mean, to be honest with you, the spices are amazing. And what Starbucks did with those spices, by, I'm sure they added quite a bit of sugar to it. I was asking the barista at Starbucks what their magic formula is. Like I was seeking answers for the Krusty Krab recipe.
And what'd they say?
And they said they couldn't tell me. And they said if they knew, they still couldn't tell me. And I said...
Really? They make it?
I asked them...
The spices are probably pre-made and then put into a package and they...
They mentioned, and I don't know how accurate this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but they said they have a magical syrup. And those are the words they said.
Oh, yeah, it's probably prepackaged.
A magical syrup. Which, in my mind, I thought there was someone in the back just cranking out on a pestle and mortar, just grinding cloves and, like, fucking chopping up cinnamon sticks. And, you know, no, that's not the case. But to be honest with you, my first one was...
Amazing.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And I bought some chocolate hummus for the first time.
That was good.
A rice cake.
Actually, I should say that was okay.
Let me finish. I had a chocolate hummus on a rice cake, and I had my pumpkin spice latte on my grandpa's 1992 Chevrolet Silverado in the Trader Joe's parking lot while it was downpouring. Just to set the scene for you guys. And I was dunking my rice cake into my pumpkin spice latte and then eating it. And it was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, so I want to transition now off the pumpkin spice lattes. Nothing against pumpkin spice.
I think we
spice.
Should go get some, right?
Maybe later. Actually, no, tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning.
We'll introduce you to your first pumpkin spice
tomorrow
latte.
Tomorrow morning before we go hiking, we can. Okay. So I want to, one of the things I want to transition to is, for me, I faced a big, and I want to hear your experience, Luke, I want to hear your thoughts on it, just whatever comes to mind. 22 was a rabbit hole for me.
Like Taylor Swift's 22?
I'm feeling 22, ooh, ooh.
Great song, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, fantastic.
It's funny. One of my my boss at work, my sales manager, mm-hmm. Ken, he my.
Oh. Is it Tim? Right, it's Tim. Right.
yeah, Tim. I don't know where Ken came from. So Tim, the first day I come in, he goes, Taylor Swift. My nickname for like a week was Swifty.
I love that.
I know. I was like, what?
Why not?
I don't know. It just,
she's a fantastic
artist.
You
know nicknames? Okay, you know when people like. Try nicknames and they either stick or they don't.
Yeah.
Didn't stick.
Yeah.
But anyways,
Swifty for you is
22.
Not, yeah.
And I'm look, maybe you didn't have this experience, but I'm curious because I feel like this is something that is very personal to me, and I want to touch on it because it's a conversation I like to have that I don't think we have enough as a group as millennials.
Yeah.
22 is very difficult for me. In the sense that I graduated college, and even after I graduated, I was unsure of what I was actually doing and where my path was going. And I talked to so many people, even the past couple months, I've talked to so many people, I can list off 5 conversations I've had where people are like, yeah, I graduated, don't know what I want to do, graduated. And it's I feel like, what are your thoughts on young adulthood and making that transition into selecting a career, choosing that path and getting comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
And because for me, 2018 was this roller coaster of experiences, bumping my head off walls and trying to figure out where I belong and who I am as a person. Did you go through anything similarly? I'm just curious. And what are your thoughts on that? What are your experiences with that?
I mean, looking back on it now, and this is looking back on like Luke, who was very dumb at 22, even though that was like 3 years
dumb
ago.
Dumb or naive? There's a difference.
Just inexperienced, I would say. I mean, I had plenty of experience in life beforehand, but there was a new, fork in the road, as they say, and I had to choose some paths. And I think, looking back on it, I was so caught up in this kind of like, I gotta pick a path and I gotta go for a career. I was in this almost like career mindset of like, I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna go down this path and this is the trajectory I'm gonna take and I can't take any other trajectory. I'm just going to
hyper-focused.
Hyper-focused. looking back on it now, I don't think you should be hyper focused. I think it's amazing to have focus, but you should be open to different options and different experiences, because like life's gonna, you know,
reroute you
in whatever way it's gonna reroute you, and you're gonna make the decisions you're gonna make, and those decisions to lead.
So I want to clarify though, because I think that might be confusing to say to not be hyper focused, because if you have a goal or some a dream, yeah, right, I think it's okay to hyper focus in on that goal or dream. But I think in terms of what you're trying to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm trying to paraphrase what you're saying. Be okay with changing your mind.
Yeah.
Be okay
with... because it's going to happen.
Be okay with saying, you know what, I thought I wanted that. That was stupid. I fucked up. And then going forward.
Yeah.
And is that what you're saying, kind of?
Exactly. And I think you put it beautifully, is if, as you always have said to me, is be flexible with your approach, but have...
An
end goal or an end focus. And I think when you're coming out of college...
I think that... don't quote me, but I think the quote is, be stubborn with your goal, but flexible in your approach.
That's beautiful.
And I don't know if it's stubborn. It might be like passion. I don't know what the quote is exactly, but it's something along the lines...
Quote, unquote, Tama Jones, yes.
No, don't do that. I think that was like Tony Robbins. I think that was...
It probably was. Yeah. He has magical words that just... Yeah.
So did you have any moments, like, was there a turning point for you in your young adulthood where you, like, had to make a big decision and, like, you had a big lesson that you learned in terms of where you are now?
I mean, this past year has just been I would call it a winding river of beautifulness. Other people would probably look at this year for me on paper and be like, what the fuck was happening to you, Luke?
Yeah.
But we don't live life on a paper. I mean, maybe some of us are artists and love using paper, but, you know, we live in the 3-dimensional, 4-dimensional, 5-dimensional, 6-dimensional, whatever dimensional level you feel like we live on, metaphysically, like, yeah, that kind of, whatever you believe in, whatever world this is, perception, game, I don't care. I do care.
He just pretends he doesn't.
But
so on paper, it looked rough, but...
Also, like, this year, I learned so much about myself, as well as experiencing so many different things that allowed me to kind of, like, be solidified just a little bit more than when I was in 2018.
What do you mean? You experience things that allowed you to be more solidified. What does that mean?
Solidified to me means like I'm more
confident.
Confident.
More certain of your path.
Certain of my path, but also like still uncertain. Like being okay with the uncertainty ahead.
Yes. Yes, that's huge. I want to say that. I want to say that again one more time.
Being okay with the uncertainty ahead.
Fuck, that's half the battle. So many people, I feel like, need to know everything. You're never going to know everything.
Yeah.
You need to be... I really do think there's a skill set in becoming better at taking a step forward without having 100% idea of what you're stepping on. Just taking the step.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think there's this... Like, you know, there's so much information out there that you just want to, like, research the shit
analysis
out of
paralysis.
And I think we've all been there where we just, like, we get on a computer and we're, like, looking up shit for 4 hours trying to make a decision, when in reality, we should just, as easy as it is to say, make the decision and then just be like, all right, I made this decision. I was a little bit knowledgeable about it. And then keep going. And then you can take whatever you want to take from that decision and then evolve it to your next decision.
100%. So, like, a story that I'll say is, like, I don't know if you remember, and I left the wood cliff the last time. You're like, Taylor, just put your 2 weeks in. Remember, I was like, I called you in the woods at the wood cliff, and I was like, Luke, I'm like, I hate it here. You're like, dude, just put your 2 weeks in. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I did. I was unemployed for, like, 3 weeks. And I didn't, and I was in analysis paralysis. I had so much pain that I didn't want to get a job. I was happy. I was unhappy. I didn't know what I wanted to do. But
yeah.
I had to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're unsure, it is better to do something than it is to do nothing.
Exactly.
It is better to go out and bump your head off of a wall, because at least you realize that that wall is not the right place to go. Mm-hmm. Versus sitting in a room of darkness doing nothing and complaining, whining, or bitching.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I was there for 3 months. I hit my head on the Osmos wall, but I walked away with a bruise and enough cash to take me to the next step, which took me to Hawaii. And then I developed all of these lessons and ability to reflect. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But you just need to take a step.
Yeah. How would you describe, going back to, you know, a term you dropped, is analysis paralysis? Like, how would you, like, summarize that? Because that might be a confusing term for people.
It's when people, like, we have a left and a right brain. You have a left hemisphere and a right hemisphere. You have a logical, analytical mind that when there's no neuroses present, you're able to take your factual experiences, the things that happen to you, and make a decision that's smart.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your heart-centered, intuitive body, your heart that just feels, it's connected to your soul, and it does what feels good, and it feels right, and it feels good, okay? And it's tied to emotion. Those two are constantly trying to communicate with each other. And I think that when you can tune into some people are more naturally tuned in to one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tune in too much to the logical mind and you dismiss the heart-centered thinking, the logical analytical mind is constantly looking for more information, because like you said, it's a plethora. It never ends.
Yeah.
So the logical analytical mind says, okay, what am I missing? And it just keeps searching. It's the ego, right? The ego is either right or wrong at any point in time.
Yeah.
The heart, when the heart makes a decision, it just is. It could be. It's
beautiful.
Yeah.
It is.
The ego separates between right, wrong, left, right, black, white. Okay, into the heart, there's no separation. There's just what's right. There's just what is, right?
Yeah.
So I think when someone's in analysis paralysis, they need to slow their breath, tune into the heart, and be with themselves, be present enough to be like, all right, what feels right? What does my heart say?
Mm-hmm.
Or just act. Like Jeff Bezos has a quote. He says, you need to develop the ability to be able to, and I'm paraphrasing, you need to develop the ability to be able to act on only 70% of the information. Once you get to 70%, you have enough information to be able to make a smart decision.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wait till you get to 100, you'll never get there.
Yeah.
Jeff Bezos, you know, one of the most successful people ever, says, act on 70% information.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
And like you just said, you would never know if you have all 100% of the information, just because
you don't. You'll never get there.
So much information.
It's, you know what it's like? It's like the bell curve, right? Like if you do an exponential graph.
Yeah.
Think about it like this. Zero information.
I smell wrong shit.
I'm glad we're a few feet away from each other. It's like a bell curve. You start out at zero information, and as you get closer to the line, it's like it goes like 0, 30, 40, 45.
I believe in the middle it's 65%.
Right? I don't know what the numbers are, but as you get closer to the line, each step forward, each additional piece of information is less impactful.
Pertinent.
Yeah. What's the definition of pertinent? I don't even know. Important?
I think it's just relevant information.
Yeah, it's less important.
I love words. I need to improve my lexicon.
Dude, reading is awesome.
I think reading is a great way to improve your lexicon.
Yeah, so wrapping up that little mini subject, I think, don't get caught in analysis paralysis. Be patient with yourself. I'm talking about the biggest takeaways of young adulthood. Why do? Because this was big for me. Be patient with yourself. Be willing to make mistakes. And also, I think another big thing for me is be willing to make decisions even if it doesn't make sense. Be willing to do things that even if it only makes sense to you and it doesn't make sense to anyone else.
Yeah, I think that's
you have to be confident.
A lot of people struggle with, because they always want to be constantly receiving opinions of others, which is fantastic, and that's sometimes like a great way to grow, is to to find a mentor and kind of like emulate some of the stuff they've done. But at the same time, you can only emulate so many things from that mentor, and you got to make your own mistakes.
You only know what's right for you.
As like weird it is to say, like, yeah, listen to your parents. Kids, listen to your mommies and daddies, okay? back to what we were getting onto is like really, really be aware of your parents, because they do have life experience, and anyone you cross paths with have their own perspective on things. But at the end of the day, you gotta make decisions for you. And whether you fuck up or not, like, everyone fucks up, which is totally okay.
When have I ever fucked up?
To be honest with you, I don't think ever, Taylor. I don't think ever. Which is weird, because I feel, pop your collar. Yeah. Wow. Where do you learn things like that, Taylor? How can I acquire knowledge that you know that I don't know?
Hey, just keep studying.
Read them books.
Okay, so let's see. What's a good subject we could transition to? Let's do spirituality, meditation. What are the moments that you've had that with meditation or yoga? What got you into it? And I know you do it. Can't take you seriously. Some of the highlight experiences for you in terms of meditation. What do you think that meditation adds to your life?
That's a wonderful question. I think meditation in itself, and I think to describe the term meditation is different for everyone, first and foremost. But to get into it, meditation for me has really, and this is something I continue to work with, as it's probably very like similar to other people, is, you know, you go in these cycles of you're really good at meditating and you're really bad at meditating and you're really consistent with it, and then you're just like, fuck it, I don't have time for meditation. And then when you get back into it and you're in the routine of it, you're like, why the fuck wasn't I meditating for the past
It's everything.
But I think it really grounds me and allows my thoughts to just come out, but also just allow me to, at the end of the day, just be aware more of the world that I live in. And the way I perceive the world, the way I perceive my thoughts, it allows me to bring more awareness, but also, like, it impacts all of my decisions, which is crazy to think.
What do you think the biggest benefit? Because I'm a big advocate. I love it. What's the biggest benefit meditation brings to you?
What I just said is basically impacting every single decision.
Yeah, no.
And allowing to, like,
give me something specific. Like, what is it like? Like, give me a moment where you're like, wow, like, you noticeably see a difference. Like, I'll give you an example. For me, like, when I meditate, I'm more aware of my thoughts. Okay, when I meditate, I have a tendency to be more present. I'm trying to even be more specific than that.
Yeah,
It's hard. I guess the reason it can be difficult to pinpoint one thing is because meditation usually affects all areas of your life.
Yeah.
But when
decisions.
When I meditate more, actually, this is a good one. When I'm in a good streak of meditation, I tend to have a better ability at bringing myself back to the present, and I'm going to expand on this. You know those moments where you're driving to work or you feel like you just can't catch up in your day?
Yeah.
Like, you're just behind.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I think a lot of us live in the behind.
Yeah, like, holy fuck. Like, every second of your day, mm-hmm. you're behind on your way to work. You're behind on assignments when you get to work. You don't feel like you're ahead enough in the afternoon. Your workout, you just wish you were got there a little bit earlier. You know, everyone's trying to catch up. When I'm meditating, it's almost like I can create time. I'm just more present with the moment I am in my day.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. You're okay with what is now, and you're not trying to, you know, play this game of catch up.
Things slow down because I'm more present, mm-hmm. but they speed up because I'm more efficient in what I'm doing. Do you see what I'm saying?
That's lovely.
Yeah.
That's lovely. I think when I meditate, one of the biggest things that sticks out to me is I just eat better.
Yes, you have more awareness.
Which is, to be honest with you, my personal experience, I think when I'm more aware of my food in front of me, I make, quote unquote, better decisions.
Well, your body affects your mind affects your body.
Exactly.
Right? So if you're eating shitty foods, you're going to have a shitty mental.
And tune with what my body wants, and my body will tell my mind, hey, you know, eat that spinach, Luke, because you want to look like Popeye. God damn it, I love Popeye. I think that's one of the big things that sticks out to me is just like I'm more aware of decisions around food. Which for me is something that like I personally have always struggled with.
Food?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? You've always been skinny.
I think skinny is
like, oh, have you been like it?
What skinny may seem like this, oh, he's skinny, he's fine. But in the end of the day, like, you notice what decisions you make every single day.
When you say you struggle with food, what do you mean? You have an eating disorder?
No. I mean,
I didn't know you did.
I don't think I have an eating disorder. But I think just sometimes I will divulge in more like, let's say, sugary foods. Like,
dude, you're not alone.
Maybe I love, you know, love eating rice cakes, and I'll have like,
dude, I'll go to Wegmans and get a bag of kettle cakes. Corn, and I'll eat a half a bag of kettle corn in one night.
Yeah, straight mouth.
I don't pleasure. Do it every day.
Straight mouth pleasure for the meat hole.
This is like, it's like crack. It's like you can't stop.
Yeah. And
the problem is when you do it every night.
Yeah. I agree. It's tough to reach for that like comfort thing and be aware of, oh, that is what's bringing me comfort. And then just recycling back and being like, okay, is there other things in my life that bring me comfort? And how can I seek other things that
instead of food.
Seek comfort. Which food is not a bad thing to reach for comfort.
No, it should be pleasurable. It's just
you need to kind of like spread out what you're coping for comfort.
Like, yeah, can I go to the gym? Can I get an endorphins there? Can I connect with a friend? Yeah. Can I get endorphins there? Can I maybe watch an inspiring movie? Can I read a book? Mm-hmm. Can I go for a beautiful walk and just, you know, observe the trees? Can I do something another way?
Yeah. Can I talk to the trees and just really be receptive of all the trees and what the knowledge they have to bring to me?
Dude, they have so much
and
knowledge.
The leaves.
I've been so excited.
I'm
so
beautiful.
Excited to go to Watkins Glen tomorrow.
It was the beautiful moment I had the other day. It was Thursday morning. I told myself, I'm going to go for a walk. So I went to the trees, found this beautiful pond with this leaves just came down at the front and center of the pond, and kind of like a mosaic of just a multicolor of leaves within the bottom of the pond. And I was just like looking into the pond, and I was like, wow, these leaves, this pond, this water.
Perfect moment.
Sure. Whatever your perfect moment is, whatever you want to call it, perfect, I just call it what it is. But I almost had this like epiphany of just like, wow, life is what it is, and that is all.
Let's talk about mental health.
What would you like to know? Of course, I'm a doctor of mental health, and you are a mental health patient.
It fascinates me. I love it. I would love talking about this, and I think it needs to be talked about more. Why do you think we're so depressed as a society? Why are we so anxious, and why are we depressed? Yeah. Why, like, just like obesity, it's on the rise. Why?
That's a brilliant question. I think there are so many things at play here, one
and give
of
me
them
an answer
too.
Don't play around my question.
I'm not playing around your question. Let me give me airtime to
talk. I'm
gonna
get you. I'm gonna get you to the point.
You're like poking me like a
Pokemon. Well, Taylor, you know, depression is such a massive topic, and I think it's something we really need to be addressed, and we really need to...
Don't give me that political bullshit.
We really need to take a step back, and you know, Taylor, I guess a better question is, what do you think about mental health?
What are you eating for dinner tonight?
Guys, you never knew it. Luke's a politician. He answers questions by dancing around them and answering a question back.
Yeah, it's about me to dance and just trickle, chuckle around the bush and then just pass it to Taylor. Here we go, Taylor.
I actually brought a,
You brought a Klondike bar and melted in your backpack. Oh, a Sharpie.
If we
want to. Kids, don't smell Expo markers.
No, that's actually...
will get you... high as a kite, and then...
So, yeah, mental health.
They will bring you back down. Mental health, back to it.
Why, Luke? What is going on?
I think it comes down to expectations. One of the things that I've noticed in my life, and one of the things that I've noticed observing other Homo sapiens, is expectations versus reality.
This is good. Yep, I agree.
And I think in my life... I've noticed at times where my expectations for, say, like, what I want myself to look like or what I want myself to be doing at a certain point at a certain time doesn't match the reality. And then that mismatch allows me to feel somber, and it allows me to feel quite, like, sad about my current situation. And there's, you know, times in the past, like, 4 months where you know, I was living out of my truck in Brooklyn. And I was very sad because I was like, I'm 25 years old. I'm supposed to be, you know, have my shit figured out. I'm supposed to be in an apartment. I'm supposed to have a successful job. I'm supposed to not be living out of a fucking truck. And... you know, kind of like scavenging, I guess.
Do you think our expectations, because of social media today, are higher than ever before?
I think social media has...
seeing the Instagram life?
...created this plethora of information that we have access to, and it allows us to compare and contrast ourselves so easily, which is really good... and also really, 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 really scary. Because if you aren't like totally aware of like what it's actually impacting on your life, you can get swallowed up into this like matrix that social media has created, and it's allowed you to constantly be comparing, contrasting, judging. Why am I not like them? Why am I not doing this? Why is he doing better than me? Like, what's... you're always, like, comparing, contrasting.
And when you're in that, it doesn't allow you to just be grateful for what you have.
Yeah. Like, you know? Gratitude at the end of the day is huge. And,
yeah, it's... I've always had mixed feelings on social media because for I got into sales because I discovered Grant Cardone, because I discovered Stefan Arnio, and because I was inspired by certain idols that I found through social media that inspired me, that connected with me, to lead me down the path that I am. So, yeah, to have these figureheads that inspired me to lead me down the road I am today, there's not a shadow of a doubt in my mind that social media, Instagram... from the travel accounts that I follow that inspired me to, you know, the names I just mentioned, to Gary V, to so many different accounts, have dramatically impacted the decisions I've made in my life.
They've opened up
my mind in so many ways. Collective Evolution on Facebook, The Mind Unleashed. There's Facebook accounts that I followed in college that dramatically reshaped what I thought. Now, how do you... pull the good out of that that has informed me so much, that has connected with me, people around the world. How do you pull the good from there? And then at the same time say, okay, what's the bad of it? Well, the bad of it is that I have compared myself to people. I have gotten Snapchats, or I have seen people on Snapchat or Instagram and compared myself to them. I have been in a place last year where I was like, why am I? I like to think very highly of myself. Why am I just a bellman, or why am I just a utility pole inspector? And I feel like a piece of shit because I'm not traveling the world and being some famous, you know. And but what all of that misses is when you compare yourself to other people, you miss the fact that you're, this is what I believe, and it's an opinion and it's not fact, but I personally believe, and you can tell me what you think. Each one of our journeys, our paths, are so special, handcrafted, idiosyncratic. Mm-hmm. There's experiences and quirks and moments of bliss and things that you've been through in your life, and pains and traumas that have allowed you to be where you are today, that you can't possibly effectively compare what's good, better or worse than other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
There are people that have been through traumas and shithole experiences till they're 30, had a wake up experiencing moment, mm-hmm. and dramatically changed their life, and then in a matter of a few years are living beautiful lives the rest of their life. You never know where, what I'm saying is, you never know where you're going to be, mm-hmm. and how, where the meaning is on your path. And it's important to know that you shouldn't compare yourself to the people. So that's what I'm trying to get at now is going back to social media. Those are the goods and the bads. Comparison will cause depression. Inspiration will cause beautiful change. Those are the, I think there's a double-edged sword. There's good and evil of social media. That's what I think.
Beautiful movement from one day to the next. Yeah. Your progression through
life. And you got to watch. I think it's a slippery slope.
Yeah. Like you said, very, very slippery slope. You can kind of like go down and you know, I've noticed it with you, but also many other friends, many other people that I've known is in our thoughts and conversations is like, why am I not doing, you know, why am I not in a better position than I should be? In like setting these expectations of, you know, I'm supposed to be an amazing person. I'm supposed to have, you know, money saved up in my bank account. I'm supposed to have a beautiful girlfriend or beautiful mate. I'm supposed to, you know, have this, you know, great lifestyle. And these expectations we set for ourselves are sometimes so far off from our reality. Own reality.
Yeah. You know what I think can be the most empowering mindset is if you have, this is not an easy thing to do by any stretch of the imagination,
mm-hmm.
but I think I really do believe that any human that has the humility and the courage, it takes courage.
Oh.
To say, I am where I am in my life today, everything, my job, my relationships, my happiness, my sadness, my money, my bank account, my fears, my hopes, my dreams, my passions, my happiness, my excitement, everything down to the color of your nails, down to everything, is all circles back to what you were thinking, what you were desiring, what you were manifesting in your thoughts, emotions, 2 years, 2 months ago. Two decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
You are where you are today because of the things that you were thinking about and the things that you desired 2 years, 2 months, 2 decades ago.
Yeah.
And if...
It's crazy.
Absolutely.
It's a crazy thought to have, but it's real.
I genuinely believe that without a shadow of a doubt. Mm-hmm. And the reason that people consistently repeat cycles of failure, continue to repeat cycles of lack... or scarcity is because they don't want to take ownership and responsibility and say, you know what? I'm broke. You know what? My career sucks. You know what? I fucked up that marriage.
Mm-hmm.
People don't want to look in the mirror and face the devil that's in them.
Yeah.
And until you do that,
until you say, you know what? Everything in my life is my fault. Everything. Even if someone else came in and fucked it up, I allowed that to happen. Until you go to that extreme level of ownership, you're never going to be able to make changes.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with just like personal ownership is the key. Huge. To growth. I mean, growth in yourself, growth in relationships, growth in whatever sphere of life you want to grow in. You know, you have to take ownership of your decisions that you make, which is sometimes a very
it's
overwhelming
undertaking. It's not easy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not easy.
Because it's so easy to point the blame and say, I had a fucked up past. My parents were terrible. Like,
no one taught me this.
Some of that may be true. Some of that very much so. You know, your parents could abuse you. You could have had a really shitty friend that like made you think this way for a really long time, or
a bad relationship, or could have been cheated on.
You know, you got in a car accident and you can now like only hop to school. You can't walk. As like sad as it is to say, like life happens, shit happens, but like from that you have to take ownership of what direction you want to take in your life.
What meaning are you going to prescribe to that event? As humans, we are meaning generators.
Yeah.
You can take a terrible event,
your interpretation,
and prescribe in a beautiful, empowering meaning. You can take a beautiful event and prescribe a disempowering meaning to it, and it will ruin you.
It's crazy to think how powerful the mind is. At the end of the day, like the mind runs the show.
It's a projector.
Yeah.
In the holographic universe, Michael Talbot says that it's actually a two-way street. So when I'm having this conversation with you, when I'm interacting with the world, my mind is projecting out what it wants to see. It's looking for desires. It's looking for things that I've seen in my past. It's projecting it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's filtering everything. But at the same time, the projection that I see is also impacting the projector itself. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So think about this. My mind is a composition of my entire experiences and my conscious awareness of what I choose to want to see.
That's a beautiful analogy.
That creates the projection. Then the projection, so the experiences that I have, my job, the people that I meet, trauma, I trip and fall on the road, that projection then comes back in and starts to change the projector. And it's a two-way street. It's a two-way street. So think about this. There's two ways to dramatically change your life. You say, okay, I am actually not the projector, but I'm actually the person changing out the screen template that's on the projector. That's the conscious awareness that you can tap into meditation.
Yeah.
So you tap into the soul, which is behind the projector. You change out what you focus on. Change the projector. It changes the projection. Or you can change the projection, which is change your environment, right? They say that you're only a combination of the five people you spend the most time with. So you can actually change your projection, change the people consciously that you're hanging out with, and that'll change your projector. You can do either one.
That's
what he says in the book, dude. It's fucking crazy, isn't it?
That's beautiful.
It's fucking crazy.
That's so beautiful. Like,
Was that followable?
Oh, for certain.
Okay.
For certain. I mean, I think analogies are so...
A projector is a beautiful...
Powerful.
Yeah.
In understanding, like, and conceptualizing thoughts and our kind of, like, understanding of what
of life.
Life is. And to be able to interpret that and, like, deliver it in such a way. Who said that?
Well, that was my...
Your projection.
That was my understanding of it, but yeah. Michael Talbot has a book called The Holographic Universe, and he basically says it, like,
I need to read that.
None of this is real. Like, it's literally a hologram. It's all a hologram.
Yeah.
On top of a hologram, on top of a hologram, on top of a hologram. And it's all these realities playing itself out.
I love me a hologram.
Dude, it's a mind fuck of a book.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful because it's
that sounds like a page.
He takes science. What's that?
Sounds like a page turner.
Yeah, pretty much. He takes science and he basically explains it so beautifully that you can't disagree with him, his points.
Yeah. It's the whole book's a plot twist on your own actual life.
Dude, it really is. It's a great book. But, yeah. So how can you change your projector? Meditate. How can you change your projection? Change your friends.
Yeah, change your focus.
Change your focus.
I think Tony Robbins, like, really, really echoed that in my mind. I think I'm revisiting some recent memories of walking in the park and sitting down, and I used to sit down on the same bench, and I would read A Giant Within.
Mm-hmm. Awakening the Giant Within.
Awakening the Giant, sorry. And he had this amazing page that just, you know, really zoomed in on what is your focus in life. And you can control your focus. And I think at that point, you know, in the book, I had to set down the book and I was like, holy shit, like, I control what I focus
on. I can focus on whatever I want.
And it's crazy to think you have that power
or attention
within you.
Yeah.
And attention within you.
Where attention goes, energy will flow.
I love that. That is, I need to put that on the whiteboard. Yeah. Put that.
Think about it. So if we're energetic beings, desire, emotion, it's all thought, it's all energy.
Yeah.
So if I come into work and my coworker is a fucktard and I spend my whole 8-hour day thinking about how much of a fucktard my coworker is, I'm giving up all of my energy to him.
Yeah.
Or her, right? So my energy, and you only can really focus on one thing at a time. It's a beautiful thing about the conscious awareness. Multitasking doesn't work.
Yeah.
So all your energy go. You only get so much energy to manifest things per day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you also could think about changing the world.
Unless you have 14 pumpkin spice lattes, then you have unlimited energy all throughout the day.
Or 600 milligrams of modafinil.
Whoa. Or 3 pounds of marijuana, and then you're zoomed in like a hawk on a fucking chicken in the forest. I don't know why chickens are in
forest. You know, I don't know if don't even know if marijuana zooms you in as much as it, like,
to a point. I think it zooms you into a point until you fall the fuck to sleep, and then you're zoomed in within your own mind.
So it's interesting what I feel like marijuana. You could say it zooms you in. But it doesn't hyper-focus you as much as it hyper-interests you. Until the next thing come across and it's like, oh, what's that? Oh, squirrel, you know?
Yeah. I think its effects, like, differ upon people.
You see things different ways because, like, there's more of a... Jason Silva says there's more... It turns up your ability to recognize patterns.
Ooh.
So a normal walk in the woods that'd be pretty dull or boring.
Yeah.
Could instantly, all of a sudden, when you smoke marijuana, all of a sudden you start to see patterns in the trees, and you know, and or in your thoughts.
It heightens your awareness of what's around you, which is
it depends.
An incredible thing that
awareness of patterns
we have to blame our mind for is, like, our mind will be adjusted to the atmosphere we're around. So say if we're walking through a forest, our mind will basically, it can only take in so much information.
Exactly.
And then from what it does with that information, it has to, like, keep Luke alive, because Luke's number
survival.
One. But also, like, take in all this information. And through that filtering process, we miss, you know,
so much.
95% of the world. And then we can only see, you know, 5% of it. And then with taking drugs, you know, kids do a lot of drugs.
But be careful.
Just be careful. When you take your first edible, just be careful. Maybe only have one bite instead of, like, a whole pan. But that's a story for another time. Yeah, I think it allows you to absorb things that are naturally filtered out by your brain, which is allows you to kind of be aware of more things than you were prior to.
Yeah, it can enhance creativity. It can do a lot of things. I think drugs are cool in the sense that for example, like caffeine. I think drugs are really interesting. Like, I've always been interested by drugs and their effects. Caffeine's cool because caffeine can allow me to perform at my normal operating potential and wake me up. It alerts my brain. Then once I've been at that operating level for enough times, I have the ability to know that, oh, this is just my normal operating level. It can increase it in that level, right? Whereas if I've never been exposed to caffeine, I might have never known my capability of tapping into that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And marijuana can do that with creativity. Maybe it opens up a creative part of your brain that you might have didn't know existed before. Or maybe you have alcohol and you allow your inhibitions to come down a little bit after a few drinks for the first time, and you can go out to the bar and actually have a candid conversation, and you're like, and you're introverted, and you're like, wow, maybe I can learn to be sociable.
Yeah, and you can finally approach that sexy lady you've always wanted to talk to, and you're just like, wow, you are very sexy. And then you go back to your flat, and then you make beautiful love, and then you realize that beautiful love is just a temporary pleasure of the world. And then you go back to your introverted bedroom and
here's
you read
Luke talking the English accent. Here we go. Just bringing it out.
But, yeah, I totally agree that I think...
I'm hungry.
Everyone should experiment with substances.
You want to play the present game?
What's the present game?
The present game is you just say something that's happening. So, like, for example, your legs in the chair.
Oh, I said take a tinkle.
And then I would repeat what you just said until the next present moment comes
along. I think we've played this before.
Yeah, so for example, your hair's red.
The floor is blue.
The floor is blue.
Your hair's red.
But see, my hair's not red.
Oh, so I fucked up. So I repeated what I said.
You repeat what the other person said until the next present moment comes.
Okay, so the rules of the game are... I say something.
Yeah. And I'm going to either...
You either repeat
what you said,
what I said.
Or...
Say something
different. I say something else that it was within the capacity of the present moment.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay. So me saying the floor is blue...
That's... You could do that. The floor is blue.
Oh, yeah. The floor is blue.
The floor is blue.
All right. Let's start it out again. The floor is blue.
The floor is blue.
I am urinating.
You're laughing. You're laughing.
I'm laughing.
You're laughing.
The ceiling is white.
You raised your hand.
I raised my hand.
You raised your hand.
What is your mind?
What is my mind?
My mind is limitless.
But we played this game in our acting class, and it was so cool. But what you try to do is, like, you try to get deeper and deeper. So, like if I pulled out an emotion in you that was subtle, I would try to pick up on that emotion.
I don't know why my mind is limitless. It's not a deep thought. It's not a deep
Technically,
thought.
It could be. It came to the thing. But you try to say what you see.
I think we should play this game for the first 5 minutes of our next talk.
Okay. That would be fun.
But I think we should... It's been a great time. I think we should wrap it up.
You want to wrap it up?
Do you think we should wrap it up?
Do you think
we should wrap it up?
Do you want
Do you think
we should wrap it up? Wrap it up.
Have I ever told you should be a recording artist?
You think so?
I mean,
we went out for drinks. The guys at work today after work. One of the guys was starting a rock band. Robert, he is so funny.
I love that.
He's so cool. He's like, I think he's 65, 70, almost 70. This guy's old, but he's awesome. So awesome. And he's like, yeah, we're starting a band. And he got one of the other guys in the office to play the guitar. Riley's in the rock band. He just plays the guitar. He's not in a rock band. And he found a singer off Craigslist.
That's...
And they literally met at a church to start a band together.
That's amazing.
So I'm like, dude, I want to come. I know Jason Mraz. I'm yours. And then there's like six or seven of us at the table.
I want to be your first customer.
So listen to this. So we're at Trip Hammer. Or we're at, I don't know why I said Trip Hammer. We're at Three Heads.
Three Heads.
And all of a sudden, dude, I can sing. And I was like, I'm yours. And I broke out in song. And everyone's like, oh, like, where did that come from?
music is
beautiful.
Is so beautiful, and it also allows you to like dissolve that ego that you naturally it's just have.
Emotion.
And I think it's a great how would you say avenue to just like be who you are.
Yeah.
And let that whoever is inside of you really come out.
Expression.
And just really express yourself. And I think we should all do
as that cliche more. As that sounds.
Yeah. Just. Express yourself.
Yeah, let it.
I don't know if it sings that, but.
Blow. But yeah, let's wrap it up. Guys, if you enjoyed the podcast, if you got anything out of it, hopefully you did. Please subscribe if you're on iTunes.
Or if you didn't, sorry for wasting your past hour and 40 minutes.
If you did, guys, please subscribe to the podcast. Drop a like on iTunes. Please give me a review. And share with your friends, okay? Share with your friends. Because sharing is caring. Right, Luke?
Sharing.
We're gonna go get some food though.
Is totally caring.
Yeah, guys. Outro.
Goodbye, good luck, get laid, get fucked.